Paid for by IMIC Incorporated.
The Cure with Amy Cabo is brought to you by IMIC Research. Life can bring many difficult situations, domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. Welcome, Amy Cabo and The Cure.
I'm your host, Amy Cabo. You're listening to us on 880 AM The Biz. We are live every Friday at 2 p.m. Make sure that you stay tuned later on in the show when we will be opening up our lines to take in callers. And I'm excited today about our topic, though, because we have a very special guest joining us today, Dr. Lopez Bernoni. Dr. Lopez Bernoni, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Amy.
Hi. Again, it's so great to have you with us today. Some of the topics we have to cover during today's show include common consequences of trauma, PTSD, stages of suffering, and possible therapies to treat these conditions. Dr. Lopez Bernoni, I shared a little with our listeners about your specialties and your practice. Mm-hmm. I would love to take a moment for you to share a bit more about yourself and what you decided to take the path that you've taken to help others with these type of disorders.
When I was in medical school, I fell in love with the brain. But not the more the how the brain works rather than the specifics of hardware, for knowing how else to put it. So I took lots of courses in pharmacology back then. I even had some at Fortran so I could do that. And over the years, I fell more and more in love with the brain and the consequences of, the best way I could put it, without a brain, there's no mind. So the mind is very important, but to understand how the mind works, we also have to understand the brain. And that's the kind of the nexus that I'm interested in, the mind-brain connection.
I wanted to talk about trauma and some of the consequences of trauma, some of the remedies that we can do to help those that have suffered trauma, and, you know, some of the medications that are available or different therapies that are available.
Well, trauma can sometimes cause an actual physiological and physical change in the brain. So what happens is, normal connections that would work in a certain way aren't available to that person because there has actually been a change in the way the brain works. So back in the day, we used to think it was all physiological. But now that it's actually some physical changes that may happen.
Right. I'm aware that there's cognitive issues such as nightmares and flashbacks and mood swings. And there's also...
You're talking about the symptoms. I went a little bit further than just the symptoms.
Okay.
I went to to what really happens. And the brain itself is changed. So it's not just that people are experiencing a temporary thing. Sometimes it can be an actual physical change in the actual brain itself, which makes it harder sometimes for people to be able to cope simply by using some adjustments in their lifestyle. So, for example, when there is some serious trauma, and we're talking about emotional trauma, we're not talking about like an actual getting hit on the head kind of thing. We're talking about something like experiencing warfare or a sexual assault or a major cataclysm in like a hurricane or something. Those things can actually change the way the brain, the actual shape of the brain, for lack of knowing how to put it. Some parts of the brain can be affected. People who experience this have an acute reaction and sometimes a delayed reaction. The acute reaction is frequently we're going on adrenaline, so we don't really feel something in the beginning sometimes, and we're kind of numb. And we're just going. But after that wears off for a while, we start having nightmares. We re-experience the trauma. Like, for example, one of the most primitive parts of the brain is the olfactory lobe. So scents, we can smell something, and it'll take us right back to where this happened.
Sometimes, or maybe a song could remind us of a certain feeling in time.
Exactly. Exactly. So there are different things that can trigger this, and we have a term that we sometimes use for this, which is flashbacks. And when a flashback is when you literally re-experience the trauma, and you can literally feel like you were right there again.
Well, for those that are just tuning in, this is The Cure, and I'm your host, Amy Cabo, joined by my special guest today, Dr. Evelyn Lopez-Brunoni, board-certified child adolescent and adult psychiatrist with a practice in Coral Gables.
In your eyes, there's a heavy blue, one to love and one to lose, sweet divine. The heavy truth, why do I want? Don't make me choose. I wanna feel the way that we did that summer night. Drunk on a feeling, alone with the stars in the sky.
Love is the answer, God is the cure, reveals from a very sincere and honest position Amy Cabo's life. A warrior who didn't give up and achieved the dream of her life. You can get to know more about her and her story on www.godisthecure.com or buying her book on amazon.com. And now we continue with Amy Cabo and The Cure on 880 The Biz.
Hi, welcome back to the show. For those that are just tuning in, this is The Cure, and I'm your host, Amy Cabo. Today, I have a very special guest, Dr. Evelyn Lopez-Brunoni. She's a board psychiatrist, child adolescent, and adult psychiatrist with a practice in Coral Gables, and she's also a psychopharmacologist with over 40 years of experience. So before we took a break, we had learned more about Dr. Lopez-Brunoni and some of the consequences and some of the physiology behind what is the source we develop from traumas, whether it be PTSD or depression or bipolar. I mean, I just consider myself extremely blessed, and I thank God every day for my blessings because I am a person that has gone to through trauma. We were talking about the condition borderline personality. People who have suffered childhood sexual trauma experience, you know, multiple personalities conditions. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
Okay, so borderline personality is very different from dissociative disorders. Dissociative disorders are kind of coping skills that people develop to deal with trauma that go awry. So there, what happens is people learn how to detach from themselves while they're going through the trauma, but then they detach themselves pathologically, and so they're it's as if different parts of them handle different situations. And at one point, people didn't quite understand that it's basically the same person, it's just different parts of them. And they actually ascribed full personalities to the different emotional states. That does happen in very rare cases. Most of the time, it's not that severe as to have a personality per se, but people will develop different personas for different emotions.
Right.
So, for example, there's part of them that is very, very controlling and is able to kind of manage everything. That's one personality. And there's another that's very emotional. There's another that stayed in childhood and so on and so forth. Those are emotional states. However, sometimes it can be imprinted in such a way that trauma can be so severe that literally they can do EEGs and they will be different. For the different personality.
Wow, so it can even alter your brain.
Yeah.
Can trauma cause you to have the borderline personality, or is that something that it's in your genetics, something that you're more born with?
See, a lot of conditions, like depression, and so it have an element of inherited traits, so there's some degree of genetics. But then there are also circumstantial issues, environmental issues. So let's just say you are born with a tendency to have an allergic reaction and you're allergic to camels. But you live your entire life in Anchorage, Alaska, and never see a camel, you'll never know you were allergic to camels.
Right.
But if you were unfortunate and you lived in Riyadh, you might have a lot of issues.
Well, I like to say that I guess a person has a predisposition, and all you need really is a trigger. And we don't really know what we have a predisposition to see from trauma.
No, they may get acute stress reaction.
Okay.
But which is different. Usually PTSD involves more, it's more chronic and it's more severe. Okay?
And is it treatable, or is there a cure for it?
Something happens and how you react immediately after, and you have up to about a year, and then, you know, hopefully you'll go back to being who you were before. When you have post-traumatic stress, you have actual changes in your brain, and you may have other issues, and they're longer term and they're more all-encompassing. Well, from PTSD, you can have issues like disturbed sleep. You can have issues with relating to others. It is very common for people who have PTSD to abuse substances as a way of numbing their emotions. There's elements of, like I said before, flashbacks. It's very important. And PTSD, post-traumatic stress reactions, vary according to the age of the person also. It's very different in children than it is in adults. And adolescence is somewhere in between.
Is it less severe in children than it is in adults? At least I'm hoping.
Kids recover better.
I guess they're more resilient.
Yes, the brain is, because remember, the brain is still developing. So in some ways, but then, depending on the degree of the trauma, they could always develop the multiple personality kind of thing, which is very rare, but it does happen. And it doesn't happen if you're an adult. That can only happen if the trauma happens in childhood.
So only from childhood trauma you would get multiple personalities. Well, I thank God I didn't get that. But, yes, I know that you can, you know, there's a lot of consequences to trauma, you know, as far as the symptoms are concerned. I know that you can be irritable all the time and just be on the edge.
You're not irritable all the time because there's a lot of numbing. So not reacting to, not really enjoying things, not being able to be happy and things like that is very common.
And I've seen also on TV from the kids that have suffered, you know, from the Catholic Church and everything, that was really difficult to see and to know that that has been going on and actually that people knew about it. And not the other day, we went to a Virtus training for our daughter's Catholic school. And we saw a video where there was victims that were speaking that had been sexually abused. And one of the things that stayed in my mind that left an impression was that one of the boys had said, "Every day is difficult for me." And that's one of the things that I try to, you know, bring up in this show. And I try to, you know, make it the main theme is that it's important then for those that just haven't suffered trauma. Great reason to always be kind because you don't know what somebody's going through.
That is absolutely true.
So
people, we put on masks.
Yes. And sometimes it takes a professional to realize that there's more to the person or more going on than what you see on the surface.
Right.
I know that, you know, the main psychological things that I suffered as a child was a lot of guilt and shame. It's very difficult for anybody to talk about. I guess if you get into a trauma such as a car accident, it would be easier to talk about. But generally, I don't know if veterans like to talk about their experiences, but talking from firsthand experience, I was a very private person. It's difficult to talk about, you know, childhood trauma such as sexual abuse and rapes and things like that. So, you know, one of the things that I had to learn was that there was no reason to feel guilt and shame, because this is the thing, the important part that people don't talk about. I understand that now, but what people don't talk about, what I didn't see in Virtus training, is that they say that victims don't talk because they're afraid they won't be believed. But there's also another reason why victims don't talk. There's a sense of loyalty. If the perpetrator is a parent, you don't think about what's happened to you. You just don't want to hurt your parents. You don't want to tear the family apart. You don't want to be the one, you know, then you have a sense of loyalty. Or you kind of have like a Stockholm syndrome where you fall in love with the person that's abusing you because he happens to be nice to you. They're usually nice.
There's also grooming, so that you, you know, you wonder whether you're really right, that this is that what you're experiencing isn't appropriate, because after all, they're so nice to you.
Yes, of course. And so, I think that was more a theme to me than whether I'd be believed or not. In fact, I didn't want to be believed because I didn't want to get my parents in trouble. And that's why I had recanted, which is very common among victims of sexual abuse, especially when there's a family member involved. And I think it's mainly because of the sense of loyalty.
Yeah, well, this has been studied, and they found that when children experience trauma together, they don't talk about it among themselves either.
Right.
It's kind of interesting.
Well, that's why I wrote my book, because I thought if I could be extremely honest in a book, that maybe others that have suffered through traumas or know of somebody that has suffered through traumas would be interested in reading, then I can empower them to let them know it's okay to talk about this. It's okay to just let go. The truth will set you free. And it is very therapeutic. Because, I mean, I don't even know what kind of treatments there is for PTSD or what can be done, because I don't think it's something that just comes and goes. I think that's something that stays with you forever.
It depends on it's that's an interesting question, and the answer is it's complicated. So people have different paths. Some people, this takes over their lives. Some people compartmentalize, and so on. So it's everybody has their own way of coping, and that comes from genes, and it comes from environment, and all of the above.
Well, you hope that they have positive coping mechanisms, because most trauma victims or most people that have suffered from abuse, they tend to self-sabotage. And they tend to adopt maladapted coping mechanisms and usually turn to drugs to numb their feelings. And they have a hard time with interpersonal relationships because they just feel miserable all the time. But one of the things that I've always learned that has gotten me through is my faith in God, and that I've always kept a positive attitude. I see the glass half full. I've never seen it half empty. And hope was a very important thing. I never lost sight of hope. I knew that as long as I had God in my life, and even though I had lost my entire family, that nothing lasts forever. And eventually, I had the hope that things would get better, that, you know, there is hope. And so even if we're living with a condition as PTSD or whatever medical condition we can be dealing with, you know, just know that it's a blessing, just the fact that we're alive. And, you know, it's another day, and we just take one day at a time. And just look at the bright side of everything. I promise you there's a bright side to everything. Even bad things end up being a blessing in disguise. So, Dr. Lopez, if anybody is tuning in with us just now, I just wanted to let you know that I am talking about trauma and consequences of trauma. I've been here talking with Dr. Lopez Brunoni, who's a certified child psychologist and adult psychiatrist, as well as a gifted psychopharmacologist. But, doctor, I wanted to get more into what kind of treatments are available for PTSD, or could someone also develop bipolar? Is this something that, you know, that can happen, and what kind of treatment is available?
Okay, interesting question. So bipolar disorders and borderline personality is more in that field. That's a brainstorm. That's very different than a trauma. A bipolar disorder is extremely strongly genetic, whereas depression is a combination of genetics and environment. The bipolar disorders are genetic.
And how would you differentiate the difference between bipolar and depression, or depression from PTSD and depression from bipolar?
Okay. Depression is a condition that has major depressive disorder. So we talk is a technical term for depression, clinical depression. Major depressive disorder is a combination of environmental factors as well as genetics. We inherit from our family what it takes for us to get depressed, but not depression per se.
Okay.
Okay. And that's, whereas bipolar disorder is a reaction of the hypersensitive brain. It's literally a brainstorm. So the depression in major depressive disorder is somewhat different than the depression that somebody who has bipolar disorder experiences.
But are the symptoms the same for both depressions?
There is some overlap, but not entirely. So with both, you have trouble with energy, sleep, mood. But with bipolar depression, sometimes the symptoms are more severe.
The depression part,
with,
you mean?
Than just with regular major depressive disorder. When you have a depressive disorder that's related to trauma, it's more along the line of a major depressive disorder. It's never a bipolar type of disorder. But the thing is, just because you have a trauma doesn't mean you might not have genetics.
Right, because it could be situational depression, and that's something that will eventually go away. But when we're talking about PTSD, the depression that's derived from there, or by being bipolar and having a severe depression episodes from that, both of them require medicine and maybe some therapy. What would you say, doctor?
So the thing about bipolar depression is, like I said, it's a brainstorm, and it repeats itself. It's cyclical, and it also has the element of having periods of feeling better than normal and things like that. So it's somewhat different. When you talk about major depressive disorder, including those that may be related to trauma, it doesn't tend to be cyclical. There are definitely the environmental factors involved.
And what treatments are available for both conditions?
So the treatment's different. For bipolar disorder and bipolar depression, you need to use treatments that have to do with mood stabilization in the brain. For major depressive disorder, for post-traumatic stress, for all of these things, what we're doing is manipulating brain chemicals. And primarily we're talking about those that have to do with serotonin, with something we call GABA, and so on. Those are the ones that we tend to work on the most. So it's somewhat different.
I see. Okay, we will be opening up.
The patients are different.
Yes.
The management is different. For somebody who has bipolar disorder, the trick is to teach them how to control their triggers. how to identify and avoid triggers and so on.
I see. Well, I would guess, I don't know, would behavioral therapy help with either one of them?
Behavioral therapy is primarily important for depression, for post-traumatic stress, and things like that. With bipolar depression, we're just trying to, it's mostly biochemical, so what we need to do with that is learn how to control that. You know, so we're aware of it so we can adjust our medications and so on. Think of it like diabetes. It's a chronic condition, and you know certain things may make your blood sugar go up, like if you get an infection.
Right.
So you might have to adjust your insulin.
Right. You had said earlier that, you know, multiple personalities is possible if there's childhood sexual abuse. But what are the most common conditions that people get from trauma?
It's not so much childhood sexual abuse as it is trauma.
Right.
Trauma can be not just sexual abuse, but it could be seeing
neglect.
Your pet killed.
Oh.
For example.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
a very violent act, I see. A very violent act, right. But when it comes to trauma, I don't know what you would think, but PTSD, depression, and bipolar are the most common things. Is that what you see mostly from trauma in your practice?
So I see acute trauma, and I see chronic or long-term. PTSD means post-trauma. So it means it's sometime after the trauma has occurred, which is different than somebody who's an acute stress reaction from a trauma.
Right, or somebody that's bipolar.
And that's just, bipolar would be something totally different.
And the people that I've spoken to usually are suffering from either bipolar or PTSD or, you know, something like that.
Mm-hmm. I see all of those.
Yes. And I just want to let you guys know our call number is 305-541-2350. You can listen to The Cure every Friday at 2 p.m. on 880 a.m. The Biz. Is a door. Can I knock on yours? Can we knock a little more? Hello, who am I speaking to?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I think I have Dr. Lopez still on the line. Do I have you, Dr. Lopez Bernoni?
Yes, you do.
Okay, yes, you can speak to either of us if you have any questions or would
thank
like...
Thank you. Fantastic show. I want to tell you something funny because I have a question for the doctor, but you know, it's funny. I always listen to this station. I never hear the program before. And I feel like I was having a panic attack and you're talking about something similar. You know, it's funny. My question is, I suffer from depression and anxiety, but they have told me that I was bipolar, but I was not, because to be bipolar, they have to do some kind of a test. I am not bipolar. I have just depression. It's hereditary. And sometimes I get a panic attack, but I am not bipolar. So how can you change that diagnosis?
Well, the person that diagnosed you, were they a professional?
Yes, but it wasn't. First of all, the person that saw me that is in an emergency with a panic attack. And maybe for whatever reason, he just put it there and it's in my records. And I'm not even bipolar. I don't take medication for that. And from time to time, I get melancholic, I depressed, a little anxiety. But that happens once in a while, like everybody else, I guess. I am not bipolar. My mood didn't swing. I am not bipolar. And they have wrote that I am bipolar. I called the hospital, and the doctor told me, well, somebody wrote that here, so what do you do about it?
Okay, so let me just answer something so you understand. Most people think of bipolar, they think of the bipolar they see in movies. Okay? So that's a chronic manic depressive. But there's another kind of bipolar that is called bipolar 2, where people don't do the crazy stuff that people who are manic do, but rather they have periods in which they feel better than normal. Maybe they sleep a little less. Maybe they're somewhat more productive, but they don't do crazy things. And right. then they get yep. depressed afterwards. And the depression bipolar depression is more severe than your garden variety depression. And sometimes when people experience this panic and anxiety and stuff like that, may be actually part of a bipolar episode that they're not aware of. So I don't know. I have not examined you. I can't tell you what's wrong, but I can tell you that sometimes doctors are not the best in communicating some things. So we don't know how to explain to people the difference between one form of bipolar and another, and the difference between one type of depression and another. And like I said before, the difference between acute stress reaction and post-traumatic stress disorder that are very different. And yet we don't necessarily know how to explain that to patients sometimes.
First of all, in the emergency room, they cannot diagnose somebody with bipolar disorder. And not only that, it is so sad because when you have some kind of a mental kind of a situation, they put everybody in the same box. So what happens if you go to the emergency with the anxiety and they see that you have, that they have that, that's how I find out, because I took the charge and I read that I was bipolar. And they were treating me really bad. They were treating me like if I was in a mental institution in the emergency. Yeah. They treat you bad when you stay, and I am not bipolar. So how can I erase that? Can I see you? Do you have a diagnosis? Where is your office? You know, I don't want to have this bipolar disorder thing in my agenda. If I was, fine, but I'm not. I get depressed. My mother died. Of course, I'm going to get depressed. And it took me a little while to get over it. Okay. Then I got some anxiety and panic attacks from time to time. I get them. Like you say, seasonal. Around this time of the year, my mother dies. Around this time of the year, I get a little bit, you know, melancholic. But that's a once in a while.
Wow, doctor. Is a bipolar a diagnosis that is obtained after knowing the person for a while, or is it something that could be acutely diagnosed?
Sometimes it's obvious. So sometimes you can pick up from the first time you see somebody. Sometimes it's way more subtle. So, for example, when patients are brought in when bipolar patients are brought in by their family, it's because they're manic. And they're not sleeping, they're keeping everybody up, and everybody's exhausted from dealing with them. When a patient with bipolar comes in, they're usually depressed.
Okay.
Because they don't... If they're feeling really good, they're not going to come in to see a doctor. So,
I went to the emergency because when you have like a panic attack, you think you're dying. Your heart is beating fast. It's like
a heart attack.
Exactly. So that's why you go to emergency. You don't go to emergency to see a psychiatrist to tell them that you are depressed. I am an adult. I am a professional person. So I know. I went there because I thought I was having a heart attack. I didn't know it was called a panic attack. So they didn't even tell me. Well, you know what they told me? I have a mitral valve prolapse. They always give you midnight dose whenever you go to the hospital. And the problem, my main concern is mental health issues in the health facilities, because they treat patients very bad. Whether you are depressed, whether you are bipolar, they put everybody in the same situation and they look at you very bad. Sit down, sir. I told you not to move. Sit, wait. They talk to you like this. It's really awful. They should make an investigation in all these hospitals. And I am not talking about Jackson or any Aventura Hospital. They treat you there like animals, like you are. I love my animal, not even like animals. They treat you like, I don't know how to explain it to you, because, and I took the charge and I said, okay, this woman might be treating me like that because it says here bipolar. And I am not bipolar. I am functional. I don't get mania.
Unfortunately, there is a lot of stigmatization in mental health. You're right.
Yes. Yes. So anyway, the program is fantastic. Where can I see the doctor? Do you have a number where I can call you just to have the right diagnosis or whatever it is? I don't want to have that treatment, thing in my background.
Well, I'm in the phone book, but now
well,
it's Google.
Well, if you hold on a little bit, doctor, if you don't mind, we can give him the number. I'll just have him stay on the line and it'll transfer. It'll transfer. Okay. But I can give it right now. The number is 305-670-1411 in case we get disconnected. 305-670-1411.
Doctor, what is the name? Lopez?
Lopez Bernoni. Evelyn Lopez Bernoni.
Wonderful. Is she located in Miami? Where?
Yeah, and Coral Gables.
Okay, fantastic. The show is great, and I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Well, don't feel alone. If it makes you feel any better, I didn't think I was bipolar either.
No, but I don't. If I was, I don't have a problem. The thing is that I am not. You know, I explained to you already the situation. So I just want to go to the right doctor to find out exactly because I'm not. You know,
I would definitely get a second opinion.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank
have a wonderful
you.
Day.
Okay. You too.
You be well.
Again, thank you guys so much for tuning in, and thank you, Dr. Lopez Brunoni, for being with us today. It's been wonderful that you've shared all your wonderful knowledge about what possible symptoms that people will be suffering from trauma, what kind of conditions they may develop, and, you know, the stages that they go through, the physiology behind it, and the source that causes it. And, you know, it's a very devastating thing when somebody goes through a trauma. So my main objective is to try to help others and give them a sense of hope. Let them know that there is remedies, that there is support systems, that there is a God that loves them, that there is medicine, that we can take some time to talk about various stages of suffering. I know this is such a difficult topic. And so I just want to tell you, thank you so much, Dr. Lopez Brunoni. So that's basically what we've been talking about, how people can suffer from trauma, but there's various stages of grief, of suffering that one should be aware of. And there is situational depression. It does happen. You don't necessarily have to have PTSD or be bipolar. There is such a thing as going through a trauma and coming out with nothing at all. There doesn't have to be something that's left behind or something that you develop or something that's triggered. You may not have a predisposition. But the stages of grief start with denial and isolation. Then the second stage would be anger. Then the third stage would be bargaining. Then the fourth stage would be depression. And again, the fifth stage would be acceptance. When something's too difficult for us to accept, to know that it happened, or it's something too ugly that we don't want to know about, or we don't want to believe because the truth is too ugly to believe. It's too hard to believe. It's too hard to read. It's too hard to listen. And people have to understand that somebody who's been abused, they have to treat it as any other injury that somebody has gone through, whether they break an arm or, you know, any other kind of injury that they've been through. And just, you know, I'm trying to educate as many people as I can so that people can be understanding for those who need a caring and understanding ear. But some of the symptoms also that you may develop if you do go through a trauma and you do go through these stages. Anger actually is one of the stages. Let me finish with the stages. I hadn't finished. But anger is a second stage. And anger is when you displace anger. Let's say somebody had attacked you or somebody was mean to you. Then all of a sudden, you're going to take it out on the safest person, on the nicest person, on the person that will love you unconditionally and the easiest person. But really who you should be angry at is the person who did the wrong to you, the person who hurt you. And it takes a while for you to realize and accept what has happened. At least for me, what it took was writing it down in a book. I actually owned what happened. I realized there was something serious. I realized it was something that I had gone through. I was no longer ignoring it like a shameful secret and having bad behaviors like being angry at the wrong people. And I wasn't happy with who I was and who I had become until I learned to deal with my trauma appropriately and learn positive coping mechanisms. The fourth stage of grief is depression. You can go through depression for a very long time where you're laying in bed and you don't want to do anything. You have no interest in any activities. You don't want to even be awake. You don't care if anybody buys you anything. You don't care to see anyone or to talk to anyone. you don't care to eat sometimes, or you eat too much to try to feel better. You're devastated with nightmares. You can even get physical pain. And then the last stage is acceptance, which is, I believe, is where I am. I've accepted what's happened to me. I understand it's something that's wrong. I don't hate my parents. I don't hate the people that raised me. I forgive them. I understand them. If they did such a thing, there must be something wrong with them. And I'm no one to judge. I leave that up to God. But my duty is to forgive and to let go. And by doing that, I've learned to accept what's happened to me, and I'm able to help others. Hence, here I am with my radio show. But, and also, it's hard to believe that it is almost that time again to close another show. A big thank you. We had so much information to cover. We are sorry if we didn't make it through all your questions or if we weren't able to take your call, though we did have one call. That was nice. And make sure to stay tuned every Friday at 2 p.m. And we'll keep, you know, sending you questions or watching the website, which, by the way, if you go to the website, you can also listen to the show if you're not in Miami, because I hear this is a local show. This has been The Cure. I'm your host, Amy Cabo. You have been listening to us on 880 AM The Biz. Remember, you can download the app by going to www.880thebiz.com, and you can hear the show live. And you can join us next Friday at 2 p.m. Thanks for listening.